Welcome to MTG Pro Tutor, your gathering of insights, tips, and advice from renowned players and community icons. Connect with venerated teachers to gain the knowledge you need to improve your skills. Now, here's your planar guide and personal tutor, Sean Penrod.
Welcome back to episode 209 of the MTG Pro Tutor Podcast. We have a great guest lined up for you today. But before we dive into that, oh my goodness, right now, going on in Las Vegas is GP Vegas. There are three Grand Prix that are going back to back to back. It is amazing. I'm so jelly. Wish I could be there, but I hope that everybody there is having a fantastic time. I cannot wait to see the results. I really hope that there is a player who makes top eight of two Grand Prix while they're there. That would be so cool. I mean, make magic history, right? That'd be great. I'm just really, really pumped. All the coverage and all the photos coming out of Vegas just look amazing. And I definitely look forward to more events like this one because I really, really, really want to attend. So anyways, good luck to everybody at GP Vegas. I'll be reaching out to the top eight of each of the Grand Prix and inviting them onto the show for sure and get their perspective on what it was like to be at basically a mini magic convention. Speaking of conventions, I will be speaking at Salt Lake Gaming Con on July 7th and 8th. I'll be presenting two panels, one of which is 10 Things Every Game Needs, which is Mark Rosewater's work, and he will not be able to attend, but he gave me permission to present it anyway, so I'm really excited about that. And the other one will be How to Prepare for Magic the Gathering Grand Prix. We'll go over the EDH test, as well as other essential preparation items to make the best of your Grand Prix experience. So, that's July 7th and 8th. If you find yourself in Salt Lake City, go ahead and come check out Salt Lake Gaming Con, where I will be presenting two panels. So that'll be pretty cool. And now, before we dive into the interview, I want to say thank you to our sponsors, both Paragon City Games, where heroes play. Thank you so much for your support. Check out ParagonCityGames.com if you want to know what it's like to be treated like a hero. They are huge in community building, and they have a lot of amazing events going on if you are local. And even if you're not local, they're all about building the Magic community and being a great force for good. So check out ParagonCityGames.com. And also the patrons, thank you so much for your support. It really means a lot to me. You are the ones that really help keep things going. I'm able to hire out the things that I suck at and keep doing the things that I'm, well, that I hope I'm good at and that I want to get better at, which is talking to great people and really developing great stories and good questions. So thank you so much, patrons, and thank you, Paragon City Games. So that is it for the top of the interview stuff. We have a great guest lined up for you today. I'm so stoked to share his message. So without further ado, let's sit down and talk about magic. What's up, everybody? I am super pumped to have our guest with us today. Our guest is a mechanical engineer from Ann Arbor who has two Grand Prix top eight finishes, a Star City Games Invitational win, and a couple of Pro Tour caches. He recently picked up RIW Hobbies as his first sponsor. Coming to us from Ann Arbor, Michigan, prodigies near and far, let's welcome back to the show the one, the only, Max McVitie. Max, how are you doing today?
Good, Sean. Thanks for having me.
We are so excited to have you. Are you ready to delve into your mind and share with the audience tips and tricks to take their game to the next level?
Yeah, I am.
Excellent. Now, prodigies, if you heard what I just said, I said welcome back to the show. Max is actually a past guest. He was on back on episode 107. So if you want to hear his origin story, if you want to hear his favorite set, his first set, his favorite card, things like that, you can go to episode 107. The show notes are mtgprotutor.com/MaxMcVitie, or just look up episode 107, and that's where you can find all that stuff. So today, we're going to be diving into what he's been up to since the last time he's been on, and more specifically, his most recent event and what he... If you want to connect with Max, he is on Twitter, at m_McVitie, and that's where you can find him. So Max, we just kind of talked a little bit about where you, you know, leading up to where you've been... You know, recently, but what's this last year been like for you?
I've been getting used to my new job. It's been going pretty well, and I played two Pro Tours and the SUG Players Championship. So that was like the main things.
Excellent. How long have you been at your job?
Almost exactly a year. I think I started June 6th last year.
Nice. That's awesome. And you've done those two Pro Tours, like you said, and the Star City Games thing. So, man, so you've just been able to, that's awesome, being able to do some magic as well as keep the job thing going.
Yeah, I've been playing a lot of magic, like way more than I did in school. Like I've been traveling like 2-3 weekends a month.
Really? That's awesome. It's so nice when you have that extra income and the extra time to be able to go and do that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I love it. It's great.
So being more of the road warrior type magic player now, what's that like? How is that, tell us some tales from the road. How's that impacted your life? What have you learned? Like what's that road warrior lifestyle like?
It's been pretty draining. Like a lot of days I'll go straight from work to the airport and then I play the tournament and then I go to the airport like Monday morning and go straight back to work. And ooh. I just like, it's like I never left. Kind of crazy, but.
How do you handle that? What do you do to keep recharged?
Drink a lot of coffee and then sleep a lot when I can. When I can afford to sleep, I sleep like 10, 11 hours a night.
So this most recent event was, let's see, top 8 in
Montreal,
and that was standard. Is that right?
Yep.
Excellent. So let's just kind of dive into that, because that's, you know, really recent. When this comes out, it'll be a couple weeks ago, but that's totally fine. What, leading up to that event, let's just get into it. How did you choose your deck?
Well, the weekend before, I played the Pro Tour in Nashville, and there I played Aetherworks Marvel, and I thought it was pretty sure it's the best deck then, and I think it's still the best deck now, but it didn't go over well for me in Nashville, so I decided to change decks to Martyr Vehicles for Montreal, and it ended up obviously going pretty well.
Yeah. Okay. So that's very interesting. So why, just because you, did the deck not resonate with you, or you just felt like it was falling short at that event?
So I think last time I was on the show, I talked about how I kind of have like a small deck range. Like I basically only like aggressive decks, and I've been trying to work on that. And so for that, I've been trying to play like the best deck whenever I think I know what it is. And so for Nashville, I played Marvel, and I couldn't play it that well. So I decided to just change to a deck I could play closer to its peak, which is Martyr Vehicles.
And that's very wise. You know, so it's smart to recognize your boundaries and push them where and when you can. Like, but then it's also good to know, you know, where you're comfortable, your sweet spot, and play within your range. Also, that's a good
choice. I think in the future I'm going to stop pushing my range for Pro Tours because I really need to perform at those because those have like the highest stakes, and maybe explore a little bit more for Grand Prix. But for Pro Tours, I think next time I'm just going to play a deck that is my style and care a little bit less about positioning and more just about playing well.
That's awesome. I'm thinking that's really good, recognizing, yeah, like you said, the stakes and the events that you know, that you can afford to. So did you play vehicles at all before, let's say, the Pro Tour, or did you only have between the Pro Tour and the Grand Prix? Because that was only like a week to play that deck.
I tested it a little bit for the Pro Tour and decided it wasn't that good for that event, but pre-Amonkhet, it was a deck, and I played it basically that whole season.
Okay, so you're familiar, good, with the mechanics stuff like that. So, because I wanted to ask, how much preparation did you put into preparing for?
Specifically for that event, I just played like 3 leagues on Moto the week before, and that was about it. Because I'd already practiced a lot, so I knew the standard format really well. I just needed to pick a deck.
So when you got to the event, so let's go into the event. Can you tell us, let's go over some of the key matches in day one. Like, what were you kind of thinking? What did you see? What were some of the matchups? Like, pick out two matches that really stood out from day one.
So my evaluation of Mardu in the current standard is that it's favored against everything that's not Marvel. So
okay,
I was really hoping to dodge Marvel as much as I could. I only played it twice.
Wow.
Day one.
I mean, I was surprised to hear that because Marvel seems to be like the top dog, and I thought everybody was playing it. So
I played it a lot day two, but day one I actually played a lot of blue red control and zombies in Marvel. More blue red control than any of the other ones, and blue red control is a great matchup for Mardu. So all those matchups went pretty well. But if I had to pick two, I'd pick the one I beat one Marvel deck day one, and basically my sideboard plan worked out where I voted in Transgress the Mind and took his Marvel, and then he didn't really do much after that, and I won.
Man, that is so deep. I just talked to somebody also from Montreal, Ethan, and he was playing Marvel, and he said he played the mirror like 12 times. So that is crazy that like you only hit it like twice, and out of 15 rounds, like he played it like 12 times. So that's crazy that the deck was there, but you really did just dodge it.
Yeah, I got lucky in that way.
Oh my gosh, that's awesome. Now, so Hand Disruption is really... is it that good against Marvel?
Like counter spells are definitely better against Marvel. Some people in Mardu have been splashing blue, but I think it hurts you too much elsewhere. So I've been sticking with just discard spells.
Okay. Yeah, because obviously you can keep it off the field. But so why are counter spells better as opposed to?
Discard spells are a little bit weak to the top of the deck. Like you can transgress them and then take the Marvel, but they can still just top deck a couple turns later and then beat you. But with like Metallic Rebuke, you can like curve out and then just leave up one blue with a couple artifacts, and then you're safe for Marvel until they draw one and cast it. And discard also doesn't force them to use their mana. Like it takes the Marvel, they don't spend any mana. So
that's totally good. And you could whiff, you could cast it and then not hit, you know, what you want, as opposed to a counter spell, which is they play it, obviously they have it, and now you count.
Yeah, you save it for the Marvel pretty much.
Cool. So Was there like, did you like cruise right through day one, or were you like, was there any match that you kind of worried, oh, like, you know, if I lose this, I miss it, or?
There's kind of an interesting story behind day one.
Yeah.
I had a flight out of Detroit at 6:30 p.m. the day before, and I showed up, and I hadn't flown international in like a really long time, and I just completely forgot my passport.
Oh.
So I couldn't get on the plane, and I didn't have time to get my passport, and I couldn't find another flight. So I ended up just driving through the night.
What? All by yourself, or do you have people with you?
I tried to get people to go with me, but no one wanted to do a last-minute overnight drive,
yeah.
So I was by myself.
What?
So I was half awake for all of day one. Like, I was, like, barely functioning.
Oh, I'm so glad you got there safely. Like, that's good.
Yeah, I drank a lot of Red Bull. That helped.
Oh, my goodness. So you're so half asleep, you know, piloting
yep.
Mardu vehicles through day one, and but you still are able to, you know, handle each of the matches and make it. And so what was your record at the end of day one?
8-1.
Oh my gosh. So yeah, so quite readily. Nice. And then I'm hoping you got some good sleep that night.
I slept really well that night.
Good. So then we come to day two. Anything interesting happened on day two? Any matches that stand out that got you to the top eight?
My winning in against Marvel was pretty interesting. It was on camera and they showed it on coverage. Transgress the Mind did a lot of work there. I drew two of them in the last game. And I took a Virtuoso with the first one and a Marvel with the second one, and it was just exactly what I needed.
Whew. And all caught on cameras. That always feels good when you have the upper hand on camera.
Yeah.
So that got you. You're winning in to top eight. And then
yep.
How did the top eight go?
Well, the quarterfinals was really important to me because after the 4 points you get from top eight, 4 pro points, and the 3 that's guaranteed from the PT invite that comes with it, I was at 19 pro points, and you need 20 for silver. So if I win the quarterfinals, I'm locked for silver. So, and it was against my one loss on day two. I had a rematch against the Zombies guy that beat me day two.
The same guy or the same deck?
Yeah, same guy.
Same guy. Oh.
But I won this time, so then I was locked for silver, which was awesome.
Awesome. Is this the first time that you've made silver, or did you make silver last year with your first Grand Prix?
I was silver last year as well.
Okay.
So this is my second year.
Okay. So this is awesome. Like some of these things are becoming familiar to you, you know, like feature matches, top eights, getting silver. That's really cool. You kind of grown into that.
Yeah, I'm definitely getting way more used to it. It used to be very scary, but now it's just like used to it.
Awesome. What? So, is it the fact that you've been able to, you know, play more? Like, what? Like, what? What is it? What's changed? You know, that's kind of made you more regular at the top, the top tiers of.
Yeah, I'd mostly just say playing more. Like, honestly, I don't even know if I'm doing that much better. I feel like I'm almost having similar results to my last year, but I'm playing way more events.
Okay. And you know what? We've talked about that on the show before. It's basically. Once your skill level is there, which obviously yours is because you're making day two and obviously you've gotten to the top eight a couple times. So once your skill level is there, it's almost like a numbers game, you know, where as you consistently go to events, luck is when preparation meets opportunity, right? And so if you're preparing and then you're giving yourself the opportunity by consistently going to Grand Prix, for example, then, you know, sometimes you go 2-4 and you don't make day two. And other times you get that break and you make it to the top eight, you know? And so it's let's just say if it takes you 20 Grand Prix and you do, you know, one a month, as opposed to doing, you know, two a month or whatever, then you'd cut that time in half. And so, like you said, just being consistent, playing more, you get to see those results a little more often.
Yeah, exactly.
So with this Grand Prix, you're queued for which Pro Tour?
Kyoto.
Awesome. And have you been to Japan before?
No, I've never been.
Now, do you have a team? Who are you going to be going with? How are you going to prepare?
So I think last time I was on the podcast, we were calling ourselves Team Ann Arbor, but now we're Team RAW Hobbies.
Okay.
And
excellent.
So I'll be going with Tyler Hill and then likely Kyle Bogamis and Brian DeMars. They're not qualified yet, but they're really close to hitting silver, so we're hoping they make it in time.
Excellent. Now, I know Brian, and I think last time there was like a whole, like there was like a squad of you Ann Arbor guys, and I had them on the show like fairly close together. It was really cool.
You had Andrew Ellenbogen.
Yes, I did. Yes, yes.
He's currently not qualified, but I'm hoping he makes it as well.
So this RAW Hobbies, is this like a local store that's sponsoring all you guys, or how does that go?
Yeah, it's near Detroit, and they're sponsoring
excellent.
Some of us.
So how did that work? So we mentioned in the bio that you recently picked up, you know, RAW Hobbies as your first sponsor. How did that pan out? Did they approach you, or, you know, did you put up records and then kind of go farming? Like, what does it look like when you're in a position to pick up a sponsor? And you said it was for the team, or is it like personal?
It's by person, but most of the people on our team are sponsored by them.
Okay.
They were sponsoring DeMarz and Kyle for a long time because they're like old school Michigan players. And at some point they decided, I think they're going to launch a website sometime later in this year. And they decided they wanted to get a team of pro players. So they asked Brian and Kyle if they knew people, and they obviously recommended us.
Perfect.
So I kind of got approached by them, but by recommendation of a friend.
Yeah. And you know what? And that, I love that you brought that up because it proves my point that I love to make, that relationships are so important, you know? And so like you have these good relationships, obviously. So there's like two sides of it. One, you need to be a good player, right? So you need to put up results. And obviously you are, because you're consistently going to events and now, and obviously doing well, second Grand Prix top 8. But then also relationships. You never know who you play against that down the road, it might be even years from now, has a hookup to a team, or it might be able to help you out in some way. And so fostering those relationships that you make through Magic, I think is so important. You know, good sportsmanship, and then also you know, building those deep connections with other people, I think is a really big deal. Because now here you are, based on your relationships, your friendships, the people that you know, and you got a sponsor and onto a team that can help you grow as a player.
Yeah.
What are some of the key relationships that you have had?
Basically, like all the names I've just said, like Andrew Ellenbogen, he's been the like the team manager for the past couple of years, and I would probably be playing a lot less if it wasn't for him. And Kyle Bogmas, Tyler Hill, Brian DeMarz, they've all basically had a huge part in making me like a way better player, because they're really smart and really good.
Now, when you are in a like setting, what's your role? Are you like the deck builder, the tweaker, the limited guy? Like, where do you fall in when you get together with the group to prepare for?
I'm mostly the aggressive deck guy. Like, I play the enemy decks a lot in testing. I'm also sideboard plans. I'm pretty good at coming up with those. And a lot of times people like to just put a lot of cards that they think they'll want, but I usually like to like nail it down to the like exact plans of ins and outs, and like not everyone else has quite the same drive to do that. So I'm usually the one leading on that kind of thing.
That is such an important skill, you know, to have, and that's good that you fill that spot, because sideboards are huge, and to have somebody who really nails down the exact, you know, cards and ins and outs, I think that's really good. Because I wanted to talk to you about that, some of the matches that you mentioned leading up to your most recent top 8. How did you side? So, first of all, how did you decide what went in your sideboard? And then in the actual match, how did you decide what went in?
Well, those are all kind of related. Like for the actual event, I did the same thing against every Zombies deck I played. I did the same thing against every Marvel deck I played. Like I had an exact plan that I had planned out before, and I did it every time. And I built my sideboard to match that plan. Like they're kind of related in that way.
What was that, that sideboard plan that you?
For Zombies, I kind of become a more controlling deck, so I take out 4 Toolcraft Exemplar, 2 PNLR, 2 Avacyn, for 2 Fumigate, 3 Chandras, a Fatal Push, and 2 Magma Spray.
And why? What's the weakness of the cards that you take out, and then what's the strength of the...
So Toolcraft Exemplar is basically like a ground beatdown card, and you're not really going to win the ground war against Zombies with Mardu. Like the only way you're really aggroing them out is with Heart of Kharan in the air. So I'm kind of trying to become a more controlling deck with sweepers and card advantage and removal, but stay proactive still with Heart of Kharan and Scrap Heap's Grounder.
Got it. So everything like that change that you said, all those cards that are coming out and going in, is to kind of relieve yourself of the ground engagement, and just like you said, like Fumigate, for example, just kind of blow everything up and just keep control, keep the ground in control as you fly in the air.
Yeah, Toolcraft Exemplar is really bad because it just gets trades with a zombie token. Avacyn kind of goes with the flyer plan, but I'm voiding in all these expensive cards, so something else expensive has to go.
That is a good... So, where are we now in Magic? You mentioned that, you know, you felt Marvel is probably the best deck, so do you still think that? And if so, what are you thinking moving forward? So, obviously, this is going to come out in a couple weeks, so things might change, got it. But as of right now, what are your thoughts on Standard?
Well, I'm going to Grand Prix Omaha in a couple weeks, and if the tournament was tomorrow, I would just play Mardu again. I still think Marvel's the best deck, but I think I can play Mardu better, so I'm going to play Mardu. Excellent. And I don't think I would change a card for my Montreal list. Like the meta game hasn't really changed from the perspective of a Mardu deck yet. Like, I think I should just run back the same deck.
So, what is the biggest mistake that you see players make?
I think a lot of people, they know what the best deck is, but they just try so hard to not play it because they just don't want to. And I know I said I played Marvel and I wish I kind of didn't, but I think most people have a less strict deck preference than I do, and they know what the best deck is, and they just like spend the whole time testing, trying to break the format, but they should just play the best deck and like spend their time tuning that and mastering playing it. And I think they do way better than they do trying to be cute and playing less good decks.
That's a very interesting point. Yeah, they know what the best deck is, and then they just try so hard to not play it, as opposed to just embrace it and play it and spend the time getting to know it better. Huh, that's excellent. Yep. So, I mean, what would you say to people who, you know, they can't afford, frankly, to just, you know, build the best deck because, you know, let's say the standard is pretty fluid and it shifts, you know, every couple of weeks or every big event or whatever. What do you say to them? How can those people still, you know, hang with the big dogs if they can't play the best deck all the time?
My friend Kyle actually wrote an interesting article about this, something related to this, where he said, this is back in like the Jace the Mind Sculptor days, that if you don't want to make sacrifices to buy Jace the Mind Sculptor, then you don't actually want to win at Magic, and that you want something else. You want to do as good as you can, but with these different constraints, and that if your goal is to win at Magic, you should do what it takes to get the cards you need, and otherwise you're kind of just playing a different game.
That's interesting. I really like that. Yeah. So it's nice when somebody kind of, you know, lays it out like that and is very straightforward, because, you know, you get the people who are like, and they push back, and other people who go, okay, yeah, I can totally see that. And like you said, if you are dedicated, and you will do what it takes to play the best deck, and you won't let money be an option. And that might be, you know, trading or borrowing or, you know, whatever it takes, buying if you need to, but really getting to know, you know, the best deck and really deck. It's good stuff.
Yeah, that article was not particularly well received, but I think I agree with it a lot.
You know what? Anytime somebody takes a stand like that, you're going to get both sides. And that's awesome. You know, I think that's really cool, because if you try and please everybody, you're just going to get lost in the noise. But people who really make a stand and they let their voice be heard for, you know, whatever side they're on, you know, you get people, you get the haters, and you get the people who you resonate with, and, you know, that's totally fine. I think that's awesome. So, interesting note, last time, what you said the biggest mistake was people don't think about the cards they're going to take out when they sideboard. It's funny that you mentioned the sideboarding thing last time, because you are the sideboarding master. You said lay out your deck post-sideboard and line it up with the deck that you want to play against. That was the advice that you gave last time, the biggest mistake. And then, so now that you are, a working professional, mechanical engineer and whatnot, had a little more time to separate from school to think about, you know, philosophy and things like that. What color do you align with philosophically? Not the car that you like to play or whatever, but, you know, you, Max, as a person, where do you fall on the color wheel, do you think?
Yeah, I would like to answer red, because I like red's definitely been my color whole time playing Magic. But I think philosophically it has to be blue. Mm-hmm. Like, I just really like analytical stuff and diving in and just like really going deep on topics, and red is a little too impulsive for me, I think.
Yeah. And you know, that may not be too divergent, I think, from a lot of, you know, successful Magic players, because Magic is a very, you know, analytical thinking type of game. You know, you have a mechanical engineering background. I think it's fun that it's this mechanical or this thinking game that we just talked about, analytical stuff like that. But within it, you're able to do the more impulsive thing, like play red. You know, so you're still able to kind of get that out and express yourself, even though you know, philosophically you might be more blue. You still get to express that impulsive, you know, red side, even though you don't do that in real life. You're able to do that on the table by turning red creatures sideways and just putting in a bunch of damage.
Yeah,
that's awesome. So let's see, where has been your like favorite place to travel in the last year?
Any cool probably cities? Hawaii.
Yeah, awesome.
Yeah, it was my second time being there, so I wasn't quite as new. And I had less time to enjoy it, but it was definitely still the best place I've been. It was really nice weather and good food, and got to explore a little bit because I didn't make day two. But
oh, bummer. Yeah, but, I was going to ask if you got out much and got to experience it a little bit. Are you going to allot yourself a little more time in Japan?
Yeah, Japan, I'm going to be there for, I think, 8 nights, because I'm playing the Grand Prix the weekend before. So I'll have time between the Grand Prix and the Pro Tour to walk around and see a lot.
Awesome. And that Grand Prix before is going to be, that's the limited one that happens before the Pro Tour, right?
Yep.
That'll be fun. That'll be exciting.
Good practice.
How did you do in the limited Grand Prix before the last Pro Tour?
I did not make day two.
So what was your preparation for that? And then what did you learn from that? What are you going to take away to do different for the next Pro Tour?
Yeah, honestly, as a team, limited has been our biggest weakness. Mm-hmm. We still don't really know how to practice for limited tournaments. We basically just play a bunch and then just show up and hope that's good enough. But that's not really a very methodical way of doing it. And yeah, for Richmond, I just played a bunch of drafts and a bunch of sealed tournaments, and I won a limited PPTQ a couple weeks before, and I thought I'd be prepared, but I ended up not doing so well. So something we got to work on for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Other than just playing a bunch of games and not hoping you do well. That's interesting. Have you reached out to other Pro Tour regulars, I guess, especially known limited players, and invite them onto the team or see what they do? So now that the team has recognized, a hole, what are some of the steps that you guys can take to fill it?
Well, Raymond Perez Jr., he's a fairly well-known player. He's also from Michigan, and he, I think, is going to, in the future, maybe test with us. He's done really well at limited on the Pro Tour the past couple of years, so we're hoping he can help us. But we've talked to him a little bit, and it sounds like he's basically doing the same thing we're doing, where he just plays a lot of games. I think he plays way more games than we do.
Got it. So he gets more of those data points.
Yeah.
Awesome. Absolutely awesome. So, are there any? So when you have a deck archetype that you are very comfortable with, I'm trying to look for the crossover between that and like other decks. What are some of the decks that you can pick up interchangeably? I guess right now, are there decks that are similar in standard? Are there any decks that are similar to each other that you just kind of pick up and play interchangeably, or are they pretty well defined and you have to kind of stick to one game plan?
Yeah, all this, there's, right now I think there's five decks in the standard. There's Marvel, Blue-Red Control, Zombies, Mardu, and Black-Green. I think I could pick up Zombies and Mardu. Their game plans are fairly similar. They're aggressive mid-range decks. But all the other decks, all the archetypes are pretty different, and the overlaps, there's a mid-range deck, there's a combo deck, there's a control deck, and then there's two aggressive decks.
And of course, for the next Pro Tour, we're going to have a brand new set to play around with. So can't really do it much prophesying, yeah. I guess, because it's a little too far out. But so with these decks, what's the biggest rock paper scissors that we're looking at right now? So obviously there's Marvel, and that's more on. I mean, is that considered on the control side?
It's kind of mid range controlling combo. It's all three of those put together.
It's nice.
What makes the deck so good is it can play all the different game plans.
Yeah. And interesting, I was looking at it. It doesn't look like Marvel loses much, even come September. I mean, so it loses Ulamog, for example, but there's always going to be some big bad threat that you can power out. I mean, probably, the Nicol Bolas Planeswalker that we're most likely getting in hours, right? But then it also loses, it was pretty much that, and I was looking at it, and Chandra, right?
Yep.
But that's a meta call that you can easily slot in something else. So I think Aetherworks is in a good position to maintain its value through the summer and then maybe even pass rotation in September.
Yeah, the energy package is just really strong, and obviously it's all from the same set, so it doesn't rotate yet.
Right. So, and then, I mean, luckily we have these zombies right now, but Tribal always seems to just kind of, barely hang on, by tooth and nail in standard at least. And so it's nice to see a Tribal doing well in standard, but it's not always the case.
Yeah, and in Japan, I'm going to attempt to not let my team trick me into playing mid-range deck. I'm going to play the stock aggro deck, and I'm going to do well, and it'll be great.
Yeah, I mean, and you know what? That's always a viable strategy, I think, especially when the Pro Tour is so close, to the release of a set. People are still figuring stuff out. I still remember when Martin Dang won his Pro Tour off of a red aggro deck, because it's a similar thing. He just, hey, it's a new set. I'm going to play aggro, and he was just able to get under everything and go all the way to the top. So that's awesome. Now, they're switching that up, though, in the fall, right? They're going to be pushing the Pro Tour to much further after the release.
Yeah, in the fall, it's 5 weeks after the release.
Yeah.
Maybe even more. It's crazy.
How do you think that's going to impact, how do you think that's going to impact the Pro Tour?
I think it's going to be pretty different. The metagame will be so defined, mm-hmm. that there won't be that many surprises, and it's just going to be closer to like the metagame of a Grand Prix, just everyone's being really good.
Do you think that's better or worse?
I think it's probably better for people like us, like my team, because we don't have quite as many resources as a big super team, so having more data would help us more than I think it would help like the super teams that can solve everything on their own in a couple weeks.
The ones that usually break it. Okay. And as far as like the Pro Tour goes, this year have you been involved in the Pro Tour teams that Wizards has been encouraging?
Nope. I was not qualified for enough to really like get on a team, but I think next year we're going to try to make a run at it.
And how is that? Do you see that as something that's beneficial to the Pro Tour overall? Like, what's the benefit of it like, from your perspective? Or is there one? You're just like, it was something else that they're doing, whatever.
To me, it just kind of seems like free value. Like, it's just a thing that you sign up for, and then at the end, if you did well enough at these tournaments that you were going to play anyways, then you get to play this other tournament for great prizes.
Yeah, okay. Very cool, very cool. And where do you see Pro Magic going in the future? Like, what are your hopes for it? Where do you see it going? What are some of your thoughts? Because, you know, now that you're up there and, you know, regularly, you know, attending Pro Tours, I've been exposed to it. What are your thoughts on its future?
I'd really like to see it become more mainstream. Yeah. Like, if it could become as popular as League of Legends and have prizes like League of Legends, like, that would be great, because then people like me and my friends who are already good at Magic, we're just all of a sudden good at this game that has like a reasonable way to play it professionally.
Yes.
Like right now, I have no incentive to quit my engineering job to play Magic full time because it's just too big of a risk. But I would love people to do that at some point if it was worth it.
I totally agree. I'm not even up at your level, but I feel the same way. I would love to see Pro Magic be something that's actually, you know, sustainable for the upper tier, you know, players. You know, and I would love that. I think that'd be absolutely awesome for people, more than just like, you know, literally a handful of people, to be able to make a reasonable living, you know, playing, doing it full time. I think that'd be great for the game. But that's just me. So.
Yeah, me too.
And I'm not biased. I'm not even up there. So yeah, good stuff. Good stuff. So we've talked about your most recent success, which is awesome, kind of where you're going, the Pro Tour and beyond, and some ideas of the decks and whatnot. What has been – so you talked about how you've been able to play more, but has there been any, I don't know, like mindset shifts or, you know, see the Matrix moments that you've had in the last year? Has there been anything, you know, along that line, kind of the outside of Magic stuff that you feel has really impacted your gameplay in the last year?
I think I've gotten a lot better at dealing with variants. Like, I've been able to, like, I've done really poorly at a lot of events in a row in the past year because I've been playing so many that it's just going to happen at some point. And I've gotten good at just sort of rolling with the punches and knowing that I'm playing well, but sometimes just things don't work out, and kind of just this zen moment where, like, I just let whatever happens, happens, and I just play my best, and I don't let it like affect my identity and like my self-esteem as much as it used to.
How do you do that? Because I know a lot of players struggle with that. We would love to hear, you know, how you handle it, and, you know, maybe it resonates with some people.
I guess this advice isn't that useful, but I've had like enough successes that I can sort of like go back and like think about the highs and then be like, I can't be that much worse. Like, I've only been a few months. Like,
I don't actually suck.
I don't actually suck. Like, I know I'm okay at this game. Like, it just, you have to like look at your results as a whole, not just the past couple months.
That's really good. Yeah, drawing on your past experiences, your past successes, and, you know, realizing, like you said, that if you're being consistent, you're probably not sliding. You know, if you're an actively engaged Magic player, you know, going to events regularly and then doing that post game evaluation, talking with friends about critical lines of play, the doubts that you had, you know, mulligan decisions, things like that, and you're really getting into it and trying to understand, you know, you as a player and, you know, how you can improve. If you're doing those things, then you just have to, like you said, you can draw on those past experiences and say, hey, you know what, I have this, and this finish. I am on my way up. Just because I've had, you know, a cold run doesn't mean I suck. Like, that's really good, you know, drawing on those past experiences. And, you know, for people who are a little further back on the road and they don't feel like they have a lot of past experiences to draw on, you know, it's okay. Like, you keep on going, you know, you'll get every win log it, you know, log it away and draw on it on those downtimes, because for you, that's your journey, and for Max, it's his journey, and everyone has their ups and their downs, their unique highs and lows. So that's really cool. I'm glad that you're able to, you know, draw on your past experiences and whatnot, because that's, you know, that that variance can, it gets everybody. Obviously, like you said, you're a good player, but you've had a run of whatever, and so you just keep at it. Like you just say, hey, you know what, I'm just gonna try again next time. Like how do you keep it from getting you down? You just, like you said, you just draw on those past events and go at it again.
Yeah, and you gotta, like, you're not gonna go to a Grand Prix expecting to top eight or cash. Like you gotta go for other reasons. Like you gotta be going with friends and having fun. Otherwise, you're just gonna hate it. And yeah, I don't know. Play the game because you want to, not because you're trying to make money and do it. Like, I don't know. Yeah.
I totally agree. Yeah. Yeah. The motives that you have definitely plays into your mindset. If you're going, you care, right? So you're going to prepare, you're going to do that, you know, just going to, like, you know, not do that part. But if you have that longer perspective, that's something that's also kind of come out that I've seen from all these interviews. If you have the longer perspective and realize, hey, this is not my only Grand Prix, right? This is not my only chance to qualify for the Pro Tour. It's not my only PPTQ or whatever it happens to be. You have that longer perspective, because I used to get really, like, you know, beat myself up real bad when I, you know, did poorly at my, you know, first or second Grand Prix or whatever. Because I'm like, oh, like, this is my first time. I don't know. Am I ever going to come back? Yeah, you know, once you kind of get the bug, you come back and you start playing again. But you realize, hey, you know what? This is not my only chance. Like, I'm going to be able to just, I'm going to take this as a data point. I'm going to learn. I'm going to move forward. And there'll be other Grand Prix for me to go to. And if you just keep going, fill up, you know, it's awesome. And then obviously you go with friends, like you said, and just make it a fun, enjoyable, magic experience. And then when the results come, it's you know, it's the icing on the cake, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. The weekend in Montreal, maybe you didn't quite put that into practice where I drove alone, but
that's true.
I met people there. So I did what I had to do.
Yeah. Sometimes we do have those outlier events and they turn into really cool stories. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I definitely hope you have better travel experiences for your upcoming events. And at the very least, take your passport.
Yeah, I don't think I'm going to make that mistake again.
Yeah, it sounds like one of those ones that you only make once. So what do you have? Do you have any sage counsel that you want to, you know, leave with the prodigies? Now that you're 1 year older, 1 year wiser, I think it's awesome that your episode's coming out almost exactly a year after. So anything really, anything that stands out that you want to stick with the prodigies?
Like, all you can do going into an event is maximize your personal win percentage, and then just show up and try your best. And outside of that, like, everything, like draws and mana screw, like, are outside of your control. Just do what you can beforehand, do what you can at the event, and just let the dice fall where they will.
So what are some of the things that you can control?
Sideboarding. I can definitely control sideboarding. Okay. Deck choice and play decisions.
So choosing your deck, choosing your sideboard, what goes in it, and then in the matches, what comes in, what comes out, and then your in-game mulligan decisions. So, and then how do you get better at those? Is that's the practice leading up to it? That's the discussions that you have? That's the play testing leading up to the event? Is that how you get better at the in-game
decisions? Yeah, in-game decisions are probably, like, the hardest thing. Those are, I think, the things that come the most just from natural talent. So it's like it's hard to get better at in-game play at a certain point. Like, I have some of my friends, just seems like they just understand the in-game play part better than I do, and I just have no idea how to catch up with them. Like, they just see things that I don't see.
Yeah, I know how that feels, because I feel the same way. Yeah,
but yeah. I put a lot of time into deck choice and sideboard construction, which for me, sideboard construction and sideboarding kind of go. I plan those out at the same time, but I think people need to focus on maximizing their personal win percentage with their deck choice, not so much like, I want to play the deck that's best. Play the deck that you're going to win with the most.
You know what? And I love this, because, you know, hearing you talk about it, we can see, one, you are a good player, and two, you struggle with, hey, I might not be as naturally gifted as some of these other players. And there's a lot of players who feel the same way. And, you know, I feel the same way. And I look at some players and be like, man, they just have it, you know, and I don't. But looking at you is an inspiration, because, you know, you've put in the work and you put in the time, and you recognize the things that you can control, and you become good at those things, and you're able to get results. You know, this is a second Grand Prix top eight, so it's not an accident. You know, you've been on the Pro Tour several times, so that's not an accident. And so I think it's really cool that even if you feel prodigies out there, even if you feel like, oh, I don't have the natural knack or whatever you want to call it, you still can be good at Magic. You know, Magic is a skills, you know, based game. And while some people may be a little further along the curve or maybe pick it up a little easier because they have a natural whatever, you can still learn. So don't be discouraged when, you know, you feel like someone else is naturally better, because there are things that you can control that you can get better at, and you will see the results as long as you are.
Yeah, I agree.
Sweet. Well, thank you so much for coming on and kind of recapping the last year and specifically your most recent event and where you're going. We're super excited to, you know, cheer you on and see you do great things. It's always fun to, you know, see your smiling face on the top 8 or top 16 and doing well. And so I can't wait to see that you and the other Ann Arbor guys just, you know, rocking at the Pro Tour.
Yeah, I hope you see it too.
Nice. So Prodigy's out there. Again, quick reminder, if you want to connect with Max, you can do so on Twitter. He's at @M_McVitie. And just look him up there and say hello or ask him a follow-on question. And Max, I want to acknowledge you for your contributions to the multiverse. Thank you so much for your time, for coming back on the show and sharing the last year with us. You are a hero among planeswalkers, and it's been a blast chatting with you. May you never be mana screwed. Always draw what you need and depart every plane victorious. And there you have it, episode 209 with Max McVitie. Thank you so much for coming back on the show, Max. Really appreciate it. And Prodigies, you know where to go. You can find the show notes at mtgprotutor.com/MaxMcVitie2, the number 2, because obviously Max McVitie is his first episode, and Max McVitie 2 will be this one. So thank you again, Max, for coming on to the show. Huge shout out to Paragon City Games. Thank you for your support and the patrons. We would not be able to do this without you. Go to mtgprotutor.com/Patreon if you want to learn more about that. Super pumped about GP Vegas this weekend with the 3 Grand Prix that are going on. Can't wait to see the final results after the weekend and just hear and see all the amazing things that happen. It must be a blast out there right now. So if you're there, first of all, thank you for listening. Second of all, good luck in whatever you're doing. And if you didn't make it, then maybe you and I can make it to the next Magic convention, because that's basically what this is. So anyways, oh my gosh, how could I forget? Did you see the picture? Did you see the spoiler picture for Ixalan? We're going to have flipping dinosaurs and pirates. How cool is that? I cannot wait. I think that one image has got me all hyped up. I'm so excited. I'm all aboard the hype train. I cannot wait for Ixalan. Freaking pirates and dinosaurs are going to be amazing. So yeah, check that out if you haven't yet. It's flipping sweet. So anyways, thank you for letting me geek out like that, but I figured you'd appreciate it. So anyways, that wraps up episode 209. Thanks for tuning in. I cannot wait to connect with you again next week. And until then, I am Sean of The Gathering, and we will see you in the next cast.
This round of MTG Pro Tutor is over. So you don't miss a single episode of MTG Mastery. Be sure to subscribe to the show on your preferred podcast listening service for more exclusive interviews, deck building tips, and elite content. Or visit mtgprotutor.com to stream it straight from the source. We look forward to helping you think and play like a pro.